Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning, man.
Yeah, brother, stop. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
All right. Okay. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, how you doing? Oh,
It's Friday morning. Holy cow.
What does that tell you?
Well, when you live in a radio studio, I guess every day is the same.
Monday. Man, how can I say Monday?
I don't know.
Well, you know what? It has a lot to do with, I'm really excited, man. This evening I'm going to reconnect with my classmates from 50 years. It's my 50-year high school reunion.
Oh, I remember going to my 50th reunion. It's interesting. You know, there's almost everyone is recognizable, but they're wearing a mask. You know, it's a you have to look at the mask, look carefully. Oh, yeah.
So were you able to recognize many of your classmates from 50 years later?
Yeah. I think, most everyone, I think. But it is odd. It's like a time warp. The other thing is that memory is a compressed thing. So 50 years in your memory, it doesn't seem like 50 years ago. You get together with all these people and all this stuff that happened isn't yesterday, but it isn't 50 years ago either. You know, you can remember it quite clearly.
That's kind of the way I'm seeing this thing as, you know, as we approach it. 50 years ago, that seems like such a long time.
Yeah, you know, it's bittersweet. You know, you see all these people you knew when they were young and, you know, and they had the future was ahead of them, and now the future's behind them, you know. But people seem, you know, people mellow out. By the time it's 50 years after high school, you've kind of worked out the issues in your life.
Have we really mellowed out 50 years later?
Well,
we've at least you mellowing out.
Well, maybe not.
I haven't mellowed out either.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we're a little bit different than many of the others. Because I was talking with somebody, the people, and trying to get them to come to the reunion, and what they said to me was, I don't want to go. And I'm like, you don't want to go? It's 50 years. It's a pinnacle. Wow. Nobody really cares if you married the star football player and you were the top cheerleader and you both got divorced. Who cares 50 years later, Sandy? Right? I mean,
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag, I suspect. People, I don't know. But all I can tell you is, well, it'll be interesting. You'll go to it, but you see all these people, and it's like like I said, it's fun, and then in the end, it's kind of like a bittersweet thing.
Yeah, well, and then the people who are no longer there, you know, you talk about them. But anyway, a lot to talk about this morning. I don't know, who do we have on the line, man? You don't know. Let's see who that is. Good morning. Who do we have on the line?
It's Max Richmond, Earl.
Max Richmond. You know, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. Just tell me one thing. Is it Friday or Monday?
Well, you know, we like our guests to know which day it is. Earl can lose track, but it's important that our guests.
So Max, what's going on, man?
Well, you know, we had an announcement from the Social Security Administration the other day, and it was good news for a change. The cost of living adjustment, the COLA, which is most years, not every year, announced in the fall, is substantial. It's the highest increase in Social Security cost of living adjustment in about 40 years, which is good news. The increase is 8.7%. That's going to mean an increase on average of $146 a month to Social Security beneficiaries. So we're very happy about that. at the same time, it is a good development. It isn't going to make up for all those years when the cost of living adjustment was zero. I think it was 3 out of the last 11 years it was zero, or 1 or 2%. So while it's good news, what we ought to be looking at is a better way to calculate the cost of living adjustment that more accurately reflects how inflation is affecting a senior citizen, a Social Security beneficiary. And that's a step that we've been trying to take for quite a while, and there have been pieces of legislation in Congress that would do that, but we're not quite there yet. And I'm hoping
the cost of living adjustment is based on a market basket analysis, and I take it what you're saying is the market basket for a senior citizen ought to be different. What would you include in that market basket that would be different for senior citizens?
You're right. But it's not just what's included. It's the weight that is put on those goods and services that has to be.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's the market basket. You know, how many of this, and it's a weighting of the stuff that's in there. Well,
right, but what I'm saying is not just the stuff that's in there, but how much emphasis,
yes,
if you will, is put on whatever items are in there. There isn't enough emphasis put on health care components to the cost of inflation, a whole range of medical costs, prescription drug costs, the kinds of things that really impact a senior more than a younger person. So you are correct. The items in that market basket have to, if the purpose of a cost of living adjustment for Social Security is to make sure that the beneficiary does not fall behind just because of inflation, we need to look at those items, goods and services that are particularly used by senior citizens, and place enough weight on them, as opposed to some of the other items, so that it is accurate in determining how inflation has impacted an older person. That hasn't happened yet. There is a proposal in the Congress that would change the consumer price index, which is the way it's done now, looking at wage earners, how inflation is affecting a wage earner, and change that so that the formula, the calculation, will look at how inflation is impacting an older person. So again, as I say, we're happy on behalf of our members, on behalf of seniors, that this increase is substantial this year, but it frankly doesn't make up for all of those years that COLA was inadequate. Sometimes even zero.
Of course, the reason for it is kind of bittersweet, right? I mean, if we have inflation, we have an adjustment. If we don't have inflation, we don't have an adjustment. So, you're looking at the glass half full side of this thing, right?
I'm looking at what's in the glass, not just is it half full or half empty. And you know, when a COLA, you know, I go, as you probably know, I go to a lot of town hall meetings around the country, and as I said, I think it's 3 of the last 9 or 10 years the COLA was zero, and when I was attending meetings, and I would around this time of year, I would say, well, your COLA has been announced and it's zero. People laughed. They said, you mean the government doesn't think our cost of living went up? Because it does not track the impact of higher costs on those things that seniors rely on.
Yeah.
So you're right. If the inflation is zero, it may be zero for a wage earner based on what items are being looked at, but it's not zero for a senior citizen. The formula is flawed. It needs to be fixed.
So Max, was there anything else you wanted to alert us to?
Well, the other item, of course, we're the Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Medicare premiums, this doesn't happen too often. They're going to go down this year about $5.20 a month, which is, again, good news. And the reason they're going to go down is they were The increase last year was more than we feel should have been set into place. The increase last year was based on including a new drug to treat Alzheimer's. It's called Aduhelm, and the way the premium is set, the government had to include the cost of that drug for Medicare coverage in setting the premium. And it turns out that that was way overpriced. It was something like $58,000 a year. And when people screamed about that, the pharmaceutical company said, oh, well, we'll cut it in half, just like that. And then the Medicare program decided to limit it to clinical trials. So it was overinflated, if you will. And so this year, that increase was taken into account in an adjustment. So, all in all, pretty good news for seniors: a higher cost of living adjustment, a higher Social Security check, and a lower Medicare premium.
Max, I think you bring up an interesting point. I think lots of people out there, particularly those who don't have Medicare, think that Medicare is a completely free to the recipients, but in fact Medicare recipients pay a health insurance premium of sorts to the government. I think I pay the maximum. Do you know what the maximum is? It's not a small number. I mean, you know, per capita.
It's not a small number.
Yeah.
The average for this coming year will be about $165 a month. So,
and what is the average? And what is the maximum? I think I pay over $300 a month per person.
Yeah, you may well. It depends on your income.
I think I max out on it. So all I'm saying is that people who talk about Medicare for all and shy away from it so much because they think it's a handout. There's a premium built into Medicare, and if we had Medicare for all, that premium could be adjusted to compensate for service provided to wealthy people.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And not only is there a premium, but when you're working, you're paying Medicare as part of the payroll tax. You're paying Social Security withholding and Medicare withholding. So it's not free. You're paying for it while you're working. And that's why I get so upset when people refer to both programs as entitlements.
So,
they're not entitlements. They're earned benefits that you pay into these programs while you're working.
So,
and you get benefits when you retire. Plus, as you point out, you continue paying a monthly premium for the care program.
Max, thank you. We got to run. Really appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
I'll talk to you either on Mondays or Fridays.
All right.
Is that we don't share values, and so.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I am really getting more and more disenchanted with our country by the day, because It just appears like the divide between the citizenry of this country is getting wider and wider, and it doesn't seem to be anything, that chasm, that's going to be brought together. Who has the ability to bring that chasm together?
Well,
Democrat or Republican.
Well, chasm. Charismatic leaders. You know, that's what charisma.
Where are they at?
Well, that's the problem. And the country has sort of lost its capacity to produce charismatic leaders, and the people that seem to be that are viewed as charismatic, I guess, are the ones who are capable of, let's say, the sort of smart aleck presentation of Ted Cruz or the Marco Rubio kind of glibness, or on the left, on the liberal side, it's a little bit even harder to identify who those might be. And so we're hungry for them. But I think the reason we're hungry for them is there's a lot of people in the country who share this frustration that you have, this sort of lack of optimism, this pessimism about the way things are going. And I think you have to change that psychological view with some leadership that helps people understand the things that are actually that actually knit them together. But the problem in America, it goes back to this de Tocqueville guy I keep bringing up, is that our individuality has caused us to turn our back on community values. And I think we've done it for generations, but I think it's really coming to the fore. We've been able to share community values when we're looking at when we've got a gun pointed at our head, right? So during World War II, I think we probably reached a maximum of shared community values. We had this shared endeavor, this shared enemy, the shared burden. You know, we were sharing so much that was obvious that it brought people together. But I think the longer the period of time when we've endured this time period in which people can just go their own way, we've lost track of community. So we don't view child daycare as a community investment. We don't view solving the problems of troubled families as a community endeavor, as an investment in for everyone. We don't view everyone having access to health care as an important investment that we ought to make. And almost every other civilization that's been developed has that shared value, a shared sense of investment, that everyone having access to health care is actually a shared value, and that everyone ought to have it as a basic human need. Everyone ought to have access to education and child daycare, because getting the right to be developed from your childhood into an adult that has opportunity to be a contributing participant in the economy is not only important to the individual, but it's an important investment for the society, for the community, and for the economy.
So that's great. It really is. But how do you get the other side?
Well, we ought to have
to
more
understand
people.
That.
Well, we need someone about 50 years younger than me to run around and start talking like this, and to start pointing people in the direction of thinking like this. We ought to be talking about that median family. Whenever there's a political discussion about stuff, we ought to just bring it down to earth. Let's talk turkey here. How does this apply to Tom, Dick, and Mary in America? Instead of constantly talking about extremes, we need to help the people who are poor in the city. But if the Democratic Party focuses all of its attention on that issue without talking to Tom, Dick, and Mary about the shared value and why are we going to do this? Are we going to do it for the eleemosynary charity aspect of it, or are we going to do it because it's good for the community? And we need to talk about how it's good for the community.
So let me ask you, Sandy, and I guess part of this is, it depends on what side of the trough you feed from, because when you're feeding from the trough of the fact that it's like you're not a part of this great system of this nation.
Well, let me give you an example of how I think it would be different. I took a cab ride. I'm trying to think if it was in New Mexico or where it was, but it was or Colorado is where it was, and it was a cab ride, and the cabbie was a Mexican American woman, and she had come from Mexico and she had achieved citizenship, and so had her father, and she was upset and angry about all of the new
immigrants,
the unlawful, the ones who were here without qualification at the border. And the reason she was upset, however, was because she and her father had to struggle to pay health care. No, it was because they, as citizens, had to struggle to pay for health care because they had jobs and they were in essentially the working middle class, but they were in that working middle class that can ill afford health care, okay? And they were upset because these immigrants who had come in were qualifying for Medicaid, because they didn't have any money, all right? So she was only upset because she was struggling to get health care and other people were getting it for free. If everyone was getting health care like they do in most developed countries, this wouldn't have been a concern of hers at all.
So I would agree with you totally on that. But the other side of that is,
these other immigrants who are here, who are working, who are paying taxes, and we are, we know they're here, and we are taking advantage of them from the standpoint that...
I mean, there's no question we're exploiting the immigrants who are here without green cards. The ones who are here and are doing all the work, you know, they're putting up our wall boards.
Yes,
they're doing all this stuff. Yes, but I'm just saying that, that the people, many people resent what they call these entitlement programs because they have to struggle to get what they ought to have for free.
We got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Hey, Tom, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people are the government. Oh, I got some feedback here.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
You're still getting feedback?
The people are the government.
Okay.
And we must never forget this. Also, 70% of the people, the voters, want Medicare for all, want Social Security increased, child care increased, college tuition paid for free, minimum wage increase. The problem is people keep hiring representatives for the job that are not giving them what 70% of the American people want. We keep on talking about this 30%, like they're the silent majority or silent minority, but 70% of the American people want the more progressive ideas.
Well,
that's what we need to be focusing on is the actual policy.
Well, if polls elected people, that might be the case, but apparently they don't share that value strongly enough so that when someone like Ron Johnson would say that we can't afford to pay more health care or we couldn't afford Medicare for all because we can't afford it, you know, that ought to cause the body politic to sit down like a family would and sit, talk about priorities of expenditures and say, wait a minute, that's, you know, healthcare is one of the most fundamental things. It's more fundamental than defense. You know, if we aren't healthy, we don't care if we defend ourselves. And so, you know, the problem in America is we don't seem to have that kind of strongly held value that was fundamental and is fundamental in almost every other civilized developed country, because they have...
You're absolutely correct, Sandy.
Yeah. So what we need to do is we need to get leadership. We need to find ways to evoke that conversation and have people realize that when they vote for a Ron Johnson, they're voting for someone who doesn't share that value.
He also wants to get rid of Social Security.
Well, I'm not. You know, let's not talk in hyperbole.
No, he does.
Well,
he does. He said it.
Well, if he said it.
He said it. He said he wants to see increase the retirement age and have those people working longer.
Well, look.
In their life. He said that.
Well, look, Social Security is going to be a financial issue as we move forward, just as a matter of...
Not if we raise the cap.
Well, no. I mean, it has
70% American people want.
Yeah, no, we have to figure out what taxes we're willing to. You know, we have to sit down and do all this work. We ought to do this work, and we ought to do it based on a value system that has
politicians
prioritized correctly. And you're right, our politicians are failing us terribly. But you know what? It's because, as a society, we haven't gotten glued to these values, and we've allowed ourselves to get persuaded and get energized by issues that aren't as important as those values. So we get energized about things like abortion, and we make the mistake even...
It's not abortion, Sandy.
Oh, now I know. Okay, let's use the right words.
It's a woman's right to choose.
Yes, absolutely. But I'm just saying we get energized by issues that deflect us from thinking through this whole triage of what is important to the American family, what's important to American society. All of those things are important, but let's just triage them and get them in the right sequence.
So I would say that all of those things that we're talking about impact and affect what our nation claims to be. You can't talk about what we are or what we claim to be. And, you know, we talk about, you know, the Constitution. We talk about the Bill of Rights. We talk about all these grandiose things. But then when you peel back the veneer of what's happening in the country, that's not at the root of what's happening with it.
Well, we've taken individualism and we've distorted it and turned it upside down so that it allows people to point at those in society who don't have health care and say it's their fault.
That's like a cancer.
I've got health care. You don't.
Right.
I work to get mine.
Well, that's,
you don't have it.
That's why people need to know the difference between private and public.
I have
feedback. I have my voice coming right back at me every time.
Well, Tom, then call back. So Sandy, what I'm saying is there are people in the society who don't see that as a problem in their lives. So the rest of these people...
Well, that's my point. If all we look at is our lives and our immediate family and view our family and our obligations in life as being the sustenance of that, and we don't see the value of the tribe, we don't see the value there... I mean, by tribe,
I mean
community, right?
Right.
And societies before us have always put a value on the tribe because they realize that investing in the welfare of a community is what makes each member of that community potentially stronger and safer and everyone better off.
But you know,
and other places in the world have clearly recognized the importance of these investments in the greater tribe.
So we have this detour, Sandy, that has occurred. And it's not like it's getting better, it's getting worse. And from the standpoint, again, in my lifetime and what I've listened to and what I see, and the fact that you keep talking about the $75,000
in median income.
Yeah. And those people who are struggling even with $75,000 and all of those people beneath them who, you know, are struggling, and yet we can't make that a priority, Sandy.
Half of the people in America earn less than $75,000. So this conversation I'm having about worrying about the people who earn $75,000 is pretty troublesome to the family that's earning $50,000.
Yes.
Right? And so this is an important way for us to talk because we ought to understand that whole situation. Here's my proposition. Donald Trump came along and was able to find a chord in America that he could play. And unfortunately, it was a pretty negative chord. But he was able, let's face it, Donald Trump is obviously a charismatic leader because he's been able to strike the fancy of 40 or 45 million people in America who strongly seem to favor Donald Trump. I'm just saying, I think what needs to happen in America is we need to find the good angel. We need that leader to come along who is the anti-Trump, who is a charismatic leader who can talk about the things that are actually important to the American family and start us looking at the positive things we can do rather than tearing us apart only for the purpose of achieving personal power.
So I don't know who that mythical person is.
Well, hopefully he's not mythical. Trump, you know, we we considered the Antichrist kind of a Trump figure as mythical right until one came along, right? Satan is
right.
Satan is a mythical figure in the liturgical sense, but when you find one, you know him, you know? And,
right.
And so, you know, I think that we can have the anti-Trump. I think we can have the positive leader. I think we will, hopefully, because I think it's what can be our salvation in a way. I'm not looking for a Messiah. I'm just looking for someone to come along who can understand what is important to the common thread that is in America, that is the positive impetus towards community value, save the tribe.
And you know, Sandy, and if we don't find that,
yeah,
it is paramount. That if not person, but thought.
Well, we need a movement.
Yeah, that's...
And usually movements come with people. Come with leadership, you know. And what we need is someone whose vision of the tribe is not ethnic, okay, and is not socioeconomic, whose view of the tribe is American.
Well, you know,
and everyone who sits in the confines of the American border is part of this tribe, and we ought to be doing everything we can to make sure that everyone in the tribe is achieving the kind of basic welfare that is the important investment that we ought to make towards.
You know what that used to be called? Christianity.
Well, now
I'm saying there was a time.
Are you a Christian nationalist?
No, I'm saying.
Yeah, but you're making a mistake. I mean, you're right. I think it used to be called religion.
Yeah, religion. I know, but as a child, mm-hmm. that's what it was for me and us, okay, and my family and others, that we had that what supposedly brought us together were those tenets, and so you saw that everywhere, and now since there are less and less people who buy into that. They've separated themselves from that?
Well, I think, unfortunately, in fact, I saw a guy who was one of these TikTok-type ministers, but he was saying some...
TikTok-type minister.
He was a social media minister type.
Right.
But he was saying an interesting thing, which he said, you know what the problem with current religion is? That the emphasis is on worship. He said, worship is a selfish occupation. Worship does not mean that you're going to be doing the things that you need to do to demonstrate your faith in God and your realization of what if you're a worshiper, what God's purpose for us is. And God's purpose for us is to, you know, make the community better, to make the world a better place, to be the accepting version of mankind, and said worship doesn't do that. And the other thing is that religion, to some extent today, at least the part of it that gets lots of publicity, is all about sort of dividing us.
Yes.
You know, transsexual, you know, worrying about who should be included in the fold. When I think the version of most religions is welcome to the flock, you know, join the flock, and we're a shepherd. And once, you know, once the concept of a herd is a community. A herd is a community, and the herd tries to keep people, the everyone in the herd is supposed to have welfare.
You know, Sandy, and
by welfare, I don't mean
I
entitlement.
I know what you mean, and part of that religious component when I was a child was fear. Fear that if you didn't do the right thing, you'd be, you know, damnation for the rest of your life. It's the way religion was taught to me, and as a young person, because if you're either going to heaven or you're going to hell, and you don't want to go to hell, as because we thought that was a destination. We thought heaven was a destination. Later on in life, I realized those places in my mind exist on this earth, or they're in your mindset. Whether it's heaven or hell, it's right here depending on what life you live. Somebody who lives on the street 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they're on this earth with no money in a capitalistic society, they got to believe they're in hell on earth.
Well, yes, and I guess we can talk about the doctrines within the religions, but I think the point you're making is that religion generally seemed to be something that was about community,
yes,
the welfare of the flock, and the sense was that that could be a contributing factor in
bringing people,
us together.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's get on with that, yeah, because that's not what's happening.
I know that's exactly my point. If it was ever happening then or not, you know, I don't know. But clearly, Sandy, it's not, you know, that way now. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Let's go back to Tom quickly. Tom, you say what?
Hey, Earl. First, the feedback. Sorry about that.
Okay, so if you got the feedback, man, we just, it's not on our end. I don't know what it is. We're just not going to be able to do it. Thanks. So Sandy, at some given point, there shouldn't be this. What side are you on in this nation?
Well, it seems to me what we ought to have is a situation where people talk about particular issues.
And so, you know, I, rather than sides, I think we ought to. I think people should have sides about particular issues. I don't think we should have teams that line up in particular ways on every issue. So, you know, every issue apparently now has a conservative and a liberal view, it's almost like if it's a liberal favored issue, then conservatives have to be against it, and vice versa. And so that's like a knee-jerk argument. If you say red, I'll say blue, and you know that's just the way we're operating now. And that's because we aren't, as a community, willing to address and identify problems in the community and then deal with them. I mean, we tend to talk about everything in money terms. We're willing to spend this much money on something rather than that much money on something. Well, let's talk about something. Let's figure out what that something is. Let's figure out functionally how we want to deal with it. Let's figure out how much that costs. You know, like I was saying to Max when he called in, people talk about Medicare for All as if it's going to be just a complete government finance thing. Well, it's financed by premiums, and all Medicare is a government insurance program that pays for privately provided health care. So it's not much different than having, instead of United Healthcare being the recipient of your premium, the government is the recipient of your premium. And some of that premium is in taxes, and a lot of that premium is paid for in premiums. I'm a relatively high income earner. I pay the maximum premium for my Medicare premium, and I think it's a big number. I think it might be $6,000 a year. Now, is that subsidized to some extent? Yes, of course. But you know, it's not for free. And if we had Medicare for All, everyone would be paying a premium. And if they were paying a premium based on their income, we'd have lots of 45-year-old people paying a Medicare premium who weren't using health care, who would be in the pool of insured, and we'd end up having a national health insurance program that worked because the pool included everyone, healthy and unhealthy.
So, Sandy, let me ask you, there are many people, who've worked my entire life, didn't have my handout, worked my entire life. If there wasn't for Medicare, I would not be able to live any
as we all age,
yeah,
clearly.
Medicare was adopted rather easily by Congress because there was this clear problem. Healthcare in America was based on being employed. When you retired, you were no longer employed.
Correct.
When you retired, you were older. Older people require health care. So it was pretty clear to see that under the system that we had developed, where employment and health care through your employer was the method for getting health care, the government, someone needed to assure that older people could get health care. You couldn't require that older people buy health care insurance because
the premium would be very high.
Because,
like hurricane insurance in Florida.
Yes, exactly. Because everyone in that older age pool would be people who require a lot of health care,
right.
And the premium would be astronomical. So that was easy to figure out. It should be just as easy to figure out that if we did health care for all through a Medicare program, we could measure that the money paid for it would be premiums paid for this government insurance program, and we could measure the taxes we're paying and the premiums we're paying against the current premiums we'd pay for health care in the private space.
So why would
that differential is not great.
So why would the other side be against that?
Well, because number one, they don't want to talk about it. Number two, there is a whole industry that is the health insurance industry. Okay, the health insurance industry doesn't like that because they would be replaced by a government insurance program.
I got that,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
but don't the people themselves? I mean, the value of their lives as...
No, because we've become subject to the soundbite. And there are those who would believe that if the government is the insurer, then the government's insurance program would start to dictate what's covered and what isn't covered. And, you know, that turned into this whole death panel thing where they would decide whether they were going to cover stuff or not. Well, you know what? That's already the
case. Yes, you just...
Because Medicare is the bellwether for the insurance industry. Most insurance companies follow Medicare because they let Medicare be the leader in terms of deciding what's covered, what isn't, how much is covered. And so it's just because we have this Byzantine, complicated healthcare system, people don't understand it. We can't even talk about it sensibly.
But see, Sandy, that's at the root of why we have this separation. Okay? I mean, when you see people, dignity doesn't matter at all. And money, as long as there's money, then dignity doesn't come into play.
Well, I think what happened, everyone would talk about that and think about that, but the way the discourse in government has evolved, lobby interests like the government, like the health insurance industry, is able to paint a theory out there It's like throwing stuff on the wall to see what sticks. And so they talk about socialized medicine, and that maybe sticks, even though it doesn't have anything to do with Medicare for all. They throw up their death panels and the government deciding whether you're going to be able to have coverage or not, and that seems to stick, even though that's the world in which we live today.
You know, what's frightening to... I hear people talk about what's frightening to people, but to elderly people, what's frightening is, am I going to be able to afford my medication? The doctors prescribe the medication to you, in many instances, to prolong your life, and yet some of those meds the elders can't even afford.
Well, that's because the lobbying influence in Washington has made it impossible for the government to negotiate lower cost. Just as Max was talking about this drug
Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's. That, you know, the initial price announced $59,000. Oh, we can make it half that.
So,
it's all funny money.
Sandy, we got to go to the break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation.
It's ironic, I couldn't remember it was Alzheimer's.
Yeah. we got to go to a break. We'll be right back. You know, Sandy.
We go deep and we don't get no sleep because we be up.